Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, where we export Swedish unicorness.
No buzzwords, just real-life stories with Sweden's most innovative thinkers and doers. A podcast made by me, Sandra Bourbon.
And me, Sara Hermansson.
Today we will talk to Soledad Gonzalez. She is an e-commerce analyst and product manager for e-barometern at PostNord. PostNord, you know, if you live in Sweden, you can send mails with them or boxes, whatever. They are really, really huge. And once every quarter, they release a report that is super interesting. If you're into e-commerce, it's named e-barometern. We will talk more about that today. We will also talk about the trends within e-commerce. A lot of things is happening, and also we're kind of in the beginning, so innovation is really happening here. And then add to that all the uncertainty like inflation, the economy, and the war in Ukraine as well. And we also talk about the trends within e-commerce like personalization, community, sustainability. How do you actually do this? And Soledad brings up a lot of interesting examples as well. Let's talk to Soledad. Welcome to the Swedish Innovation Podcast, Soledad Gonzalez.
Thank you, Sandra.
You are e-commerce analyst and product manager for e-barometern at PostNord. It's a report that you publish every quarter, and it's really good read for the people out there that want to like see the trends, what's up with when it comes to e-commerce. But let's like take it from the beginning. For the people that doesn't know PostNord, what is it? Why do you exist, PostNord?
Yes, PostNord is the largest logistics supplier or transport company in the Nordics, and we work, make it simple, we deliver packages from e-commerce companies, and we also work, the other part of our business is letters, that we actually work as a post office, we can say. So that's a simple way of explaining it.
Okay, and what do you do there? What's your role?
I do several different things. I actually work at the beginning of when I started in the company for about a year ago, the idea was that I was going to work with market trends, that I was going to make some kind of structure around how to analyze the market, what's going on, what are the trends and things like that. And then soon after I started, the person that actually was responsible for e-barometern, for our report, got a new job. So they asked me whether I wanted to work with that, and I thought it was really interesting. Absolutely. And I also work now, I'm in charge of our report. Yes.
So you were at the right place at the right time.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's a really, really great job, this e-barometern. I'm sure that they saw that you were like really a driven person at PostNord, and like, okay,
thank you. Well, actually, you know, I'm relatively new in the whole of the e-commerce sector. I don't come from Sweden. I come from Argentina, and I've been living in Sweden for 10 years, and I worked with many different things before. I was a teacher in my home country. I was a teacher here. And then I got a degree in Sweden in political science, and I worked for the state in a Swedish migration agency. And after that, I thought that I wanted to do something more innovative and different. And I decided to change careers. So I did a degree in e-commerce management. That's the way I got this job, actually. And it was a really good school where I studied, and I got the possibility during my studies to work in two different companies. So I got good. I work for Philip Nordics, so a very large international company, and a little startup later on. So I got a very, very good picture of what the e-commerce market looks like. It was a good beginning. And then this was the real first job in e-commerce that I got after my degree. So I'm really excited about ending up here. It's amazing. I learn a lot every day, actually.
That's so cool, because I think in this field, like e-commerce, we have just gotten started, basically. So much is happening. So that's why I'm super happy that you are on the podcast, and we will talk more about the trends within e-commerce connected to innovation. But if we like see, okay, for the e-barometern, let's talk a little bit about the report that you just published. And like in the beginning there, you say during this first quarter of 2022, the growth was negative for e-commerce with -8% in Sweden. And the main reason, it's of course the extreme growth that we have seen like the past year, 53%, I think. And now the corona pandemic is like, it's behind us a little bit, kind of, we can say. And but of course we have now seen a lot of other issues arising with the inflation, uncertainty in economy, and also the war in Ukraine. So like, just for what are the key takeaways of e-barometern that you just released here?
Yes, as you've described, it's exactly the way it is. We've got, for the first time in long, long period, a negative growth, -8% for the whole of e-commerce in Sweden. That does not mean that the e-commerce market is small. On the contrary, during these 2 years, during the pandemic, not only in Sweden, but in the whole world, we've seen a huge growth in e-commerce. In certain categories, the e-commerce market share has doubled. So comparing to these 2 years, we always compare the growth each quarter in comparison to the previous year, the same quarter. So which means that whatever we compare these coming years will always be in comparison to 2021, in which we have historically huge growth. So meaning with this, I mean that even though it's -8% in the total sales this first quarter, it is the total market of e-commerce market is a lot larger than before the pandemic. So basically the whole revenue and sales, it's much larger than before.
So e-commerce is here to stay, I guess. People have started to shop in a different way during the pandemic, and they continue to do so, but they're shifting some behavior when it comes to maybe you go to your office, you want to do some shopping, like go to a store, and we don't have the restrictions and stuff.
Exactly.
So
I think that people as well have kind of missed a bit this going in stores and discovering new things. So I think that people are going back to physical stores again, but does not mean that. I think that it's convenience is a big thing in e-commerce. It is comfortable, it is easy. There's a lot, the assortment in on the internet is huge. So there's many pluses, there's many positive things about buying online. So I think that people will continue, those that are already got this new behavior, but we'll probably see more of a hybrid in the future, a combination of both physical stores and online shopping. There's a huge discussion that people say that the shops will disappear. I do not believe that. I think that what we will see in the future is more of a combination of both or several channels.
What do you think the role of the e-commerce will be then to add value, and contrary to like shops in malls and stuff like that?
That's a good question. Well, actually, the e-commerce is right now in a huge transformation, because at the beginning it was mostly like, oh, the website and the basics. But nowadays, because social commerce and social media grow so much, and it's also a huge channel within e-commerce, it is more related to e-commerce right now is more related to being part of a community, interacting with other people that have the same interests. So it's also like being in social media. It's a bit like hanging with your friends, and the brands that work well with this, that are very good at this online, create that feeling becoming part of a community online.
So that's social commerce for the people that doesn't know what's that.
Yeah, social commerce, basically that you find your brands, your favorite brands, or your or the stores you like online, and you kind of hang out and you interact with these brands on Instagram, on Facebook, on the different kinds of social media platforms. And there's also other kinds of trends, such as I'm describing social media, live streaming, for instance. So there's companies that are trying the video format in live shows where they show their products to the customers live, and the customer has the possibility to interact and ask questions in the chat and click on the product directly to go to the website and buy it. So I think that what's going on in e-commerce is that the online shopping experience is becoming closer to the physical, in the sense that it feels more like 3D, more like real. And in the same thing with physical stores, they are combining technological new technology to become more digital. So that's why I said that it's becoming more of a hybrid.
I think it's super interesting because when you buy stuff online, especially when it comes to clothes, you get it home and then you're like, okay, this textile is not at all what I expected, and you need to send it back. And like part of the sustainability trend as well, it doesn't feel good sending back, what is it, like 50 or 80% sometimes some companies have in return rates. And that's expensive in terms of money, and it's also expensive in terms of resources. We will come more into the sustainability trend soon. But I also heard that this live shopping trend, it started in China like a couple of years ago or a little bit after here. And they say that it actually accounts for 15 to 20% of the total e-commerce today. So this is like a huge, huge trend. A lot of money involved. Maybe it's small in Sweden right now, but I guess that, yeah, it will come more and more.
Yeah, what they've been very good at, well, this trend started about 5-6 years ago in China, and it became huge. Chinese companies have been very good at are at looking at this as an ecosystem, not like a website on the one side, social commerce on the other side, like social media. They have very good being very good at kind of integrating the whole of the experience. So basically, they have an app. Most Chinese people, it's called WeChat. It's like a bit like WhatsApp.
Well, what was the name of it?
WeChat. They kind of going there, they can interact with companies, and you can have videos and a lot of other kinds of things like gaming. So they are very, very, very good at testing all the things, and in a very, very early stage within e-commerce, as e-commerce has been growing then. And it's become successful. I mean, I think that there's many things that have done that have caused this. It's not only the technology, but also creating new kinds of ways of interacting. For instance, if you look at influencer marketing, mm-hmm. for instance. Yeah. So because of social media as well, because of other channels like YouTube, there are certain profiles that have become huge. So companies use or get help from these people in order to grow their brand. So these go hand in hand with social shopping and with also live shopping. That many companies use influencers for this.
Yeah, and you think that that's a trend that is here to stay, the influencer marketing?
Yeah, definitely. I do think that it is something that we're going to see grow here in Sweden as well, both social commerce and live shopping. There's actually very good technology in Sweden for live shopping. I don't know if you've heard of Bambuser, of Streamify. These are companies that help e-commerce companies with live shopping, and they basically have the technical solution for it. So I do think that this is going to grow.
Is that a way as well? I know Sweden is kind of a small market if you compare to China, right? We're 10 million people here.
Yes.
And it takes time to like produce, you know, a live shopping event, I guess. You need to prepare, you need to do the, like have good equipment, and it's not just, you don't do it in like 20 minutes. So I guess maybe that's also a way to reach out globally directly.
Absolutely. But, you know, I think that it depends on the level of ambition that you have with a live show. You don't need a studio. You don't need a lot of stuff in order to do a live show. It's just like if you would like start making videos with your mobile, you could be live sending for an Instagram, for instance, you know. So it depends a lot on the what resources the company has. It doesn't need to cost a lot. The companies need is to think of a strategy. Why do we do this in the first place? Who are going to be part of it? Who are going to represent us in a live show? And what is it that we are going to create for value? Because it's not like doing making videos just to show your product. You have to create some other value apart from showing the product. I think so. It depends a lot on what. Of course, your company is, the product is, but I do think that there's a lot of potential for both small companies and big companies working with live shopping.
Yeah, so maybe for the small ones that are like direct to consumer, then you want to engage with the founder, maybe this influencer started, maybe cosmetic brand, whatever it can be. Then it's kind of clear, like, okay, I want to hang out with my idol, basically. But if it's a big company that uses like influencer marketer, using influencer marketing, then it needs to give them something else, I guess, because
yes, I think that the key here would be to think that it needs to feel, or it needs to be authentic, that people actually think that you do that for them in order to create some value for them. I can take an example of a company that has been very good at this in Sweden, and it's a company called Shello Company. They sell a lot of electronic products, so home electronics basically. And what happened? Yeah, what happened during the pandemic that they didn't have any customers in their physical stores, of course, because people did not go to stores. Right. So they thought, OK, so people are not coming to the store. Then we will come to the people. What did they do? They started live sending with their salespeople, people that otherwise would be in the store. So basically it was really smart, because they use the resources that I already have. You don't need an influencer for that. And these people are already they know their products and they are able to talk about it. So they kind of use their personnel, their staff as influencers. And it became really popular because generally electronics, you know, devices like computers, mobiles, etc., you generally need a lot of guiding and instructions when you buy that. Normal that people go into like YouTube and you look at YouTube tutorials in order to compare products when they are going to buy electronics. So they use this idea that customers need information, and they put it that was a concept basically. So they took the salesperson, and the concept was to inform the customer on the product and all the features, et cetera, et cetera. And they've done over 300 shows now since Corona. It's become a success. I mean, they've become really, really big, actually.
In 300, yeah, that's a lot. That's basically one every other day.
Yeah, but you know what? What I thought was really good about it when they started, that they didn't make it like a big thing about it. They just thought, okay, we are trying this. The objective is this. We're going to reach out our customers. So they have a clear objective, of course. And then they also decided who is going to send, as I said, and what was the message. But they didn't make a big deal like, oh, now we have a, we need to have a studio and things like that. You know what I mean? So sometimes you don't need big stuff to create great things. You just try and try and try in the small, with small steps. And I think that they've done it very well. A lot of companies could learn from that.
Yeah, so like dare to try and maybe use the technology that exists. You can look at other countries, what they're doing. China, for instance, is a big that is ahead of us. That's one trend then that we talked about, or two basically, like live shopping and social commerce. Do you have any more? Like what trend do you see in e-commerce right now?
Well, actually, there's many interesting things to talk about. As I said, I usually follow trends, both in by reading articles and things like that. But I usually attend a lot of conferences, both in Sweden. And I was also 2 weeks ago in London in a huge conference, retail conference. And I get a lot of inspiration from both those companies that are really, really high tech and trying new things, but also smaller companies that innovate in different ways, not only with technology. One thing that I think is really interesting that is going on within e-commerce is this idea of going from transaction to creating a relation to the customer. So since the beginning, I can say, of e-commerce, e-commerce has been very transactional. Basically, you just put up the product on the site and describe the product so that you get customers go into the product and convert. So basically, it's been very, very focused on selling the product online. But I think that time is already like passé. It's already over. Customers expect some other values, some other things apart from a product. So what I think is important is to start creating more of an emotional relation to the customer, right? And you can do that as in many different ways. One thing that I mentioned previously was this of creating a community around a product. There's many good examples of this indeed direct-to-consumer companies. So companies are starting their online business without any other distributors. They sell direct to the customer. For instance, there's a company called Revolution Race. They are from Borås, the e-commerce city in Sweden, and they sell outdoors clothes. Basically, with a different touch, because they created models that are a lot more lighter, brighter colors. And I think it's a quite amazing way of innovating in the product, in the sense of a product, but also in the way they worked. Because what I've done is that they have been huge in social media. They started creating very, very like simple videos out in the woods, and they put them up on Facebook. So instead of creating like very curated, perfect with perfect models content, they did the opposite. They just went out in the woods and showed their trousers and how they can use them. You can use them in the woods and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was a little shocked when I saw the video first. I'm like, oh my god, this feels like somebody just recorded out in the woods, and you can hear like some strange noises. But that's also like creating this authentic feel.
Exactly.
That you also said. Then you feel like you come closer to them, and their CEO is super cool, like out talking all the time. And yeah, and as you said, they're also outdoors clothes before has been like wood color or like green or brown,
exactly.
And now they come with their bright colors and they're selling in a complete different way. And I also think that they said that it's basically half the price based on compared to Fjällräven, because they do direct to consumers. They don't have any middleman.
So they've innovated. If you talk about innovation, they've innovated in several different ways. Firstly, thinking of a product, taking a product that already is in the market for many not centuries, but many, many years. And they've thought differently about it to do it more like brighter colors, but also like feminine forms for women. And also, secondly, they thought direct to consumers are a completely different business model. And thirdly, the way they engage, their community. They created a community. And now I follow them also in social media just to see what is it. I love their brand, I'm going to be honest. And the other day I got really inspired because I really like trekking. I love trekking. I love walking in nature. And I got really inspired by a video that I put up from, I think it was like Norway. And it was really high quality video showing the landscape and they do, I think that they do a lot of collabs with influencers within that niche, you know, like people that trekking, that have tips on where to travel and stuff like that. So they create, as I said, a relationship with the customer. They create engagement and a community, which is a completely different thing of just saying, I have these trousers that are green. Do you want to buy them? You know what I mean? Like, it's a completely different thing.
But this relationship, is it driven by like the younger generation? When we've seen like, okay, Generation Z and Y, we need to have like this purpose. You need to understand the why of the company, and it needs to go hand in hand with your own values. What is the driver behind this?
Yes, actually, it's interesting that you take this generation aspect. I think that we people, no matter age, you want to relate to somebody or someone in a much deeper level than just a transaction. So, definitely, I do agree with that. The younger generation is caring a lot more about purpose and things like that. They maybe say it a lot more, but I think that for everyone, those brands that you remember since you were a child, those brands that your parents use, even though it's another generation, are brands that that actually made some kind of special value, you know, they gave something apart from just a product.
So we all always had these relationships, but now with the technology, the companies are like finding out more ways to create the relationships, basically.
Exactly.
And this community that you described, like, can you give an example, like, how do they do this revolution race?
Oh, there's several interesting examples. Well, as I said, Revolution Race is one. There's another good example within DTC. It's Maya Delores. It's a girl. Their founder is a young. She's a writer, or has been for most of her life. And so her topic is horses, basically, and clothes that would be comfortable to ride in. And so because this young woman already had that network, because she was a writer herself, then she could create this community by reaching out to people that write. And because she knows teachers, it was really smart. I listened to her in several podcasts, the way she did it. She did it very organically, the way she grew her company. So basically she created this comfortable, again, a very innovative way of thinking of clothes. She combined the traditional, you know, clothes within writing, but she used other materials that were more comfortable. So basically she combined training clothes with writing clothes, and that's what was her product. When she went to like, what do you call it?
Shows, maybe.
Shows, exactly. Yeah. Writing shows. And she just put there, you know, a stand and showed the clothes to people that wrote. And she found certain influencers, if you want to call it that way, teachers, for instance, or leaders, people that are leaders within that niche. And she got them try the trousers and they said, oh my God, these are really comfortable. And then, of course, all the young girls, often it's girls that looked up to their teachers, they see, oh, good, my teacher is using those trousers, then they must be good. You know what I mean? Like, and she organically created this community around her products by reaching out to people that were, you know, could influence others in the community, and now it's become huge and international as well. So her brand is now international, Maya Dolores.
But is it? Do you need, in order for this community to work, when she's doing it globally as well? I guess that you need to have some kind of technology platform where people can chat with each other, give reviews on the page. I don't know, like what does it look like technology wise?
I understand. Actually, she just grew in social media with Instagram. Basically, her focus was Instagram. It was pretty interesting because I really like listening to her. She was so ambitious. She already from the beginning had a clear idea that she would go international. So she, even though people said, why do you write in English? She wrote in English, in the, you know, all the content and things like that. And she did become international. So she had a very, very clear idea and ambition from the beginning. And she tells when she tells her story, she says that she started in her little bedroom in Uppsala, where she lived at her parents. Her parents helped her a lot with, you know, sending out the packages and stuff like that at the beginning. Now, of course, she has her own company and her own place with even a staff and things like that. But at the beginning, it was just her and her family. So it's very, very interesting the way. And another important thing on why community or creating a community or creating engagement around your product is important is because the costs of marketing are growing a lot. The cost for keywords, you know, in both Google and also Facebook ads are growing a lot, have grown the last years quite a lot. So it's becoming really, really expensive to reach out. And
that is connected to Instagram as well. I know that a lot of e-tailers have the problem now. They have maybe a lot of followers. They built up this community, and then Instagram changes the algorithm, so you don't reach out to anybody, basically. So this is the problem with using these kind of platforms. Do you see any other like alternative how to take control over your community, like, so Instagram doesn't own them?
Yes, I would say that you can use more organic channels to always combined with social media. For instance,
email.
Marketing, newsletters. But in that case, you really need to add value in order for people to open them. I mean, because if you just say 20% discount, that's nothing. I mean, it's not creating value. If you just communicate low prices, that's not creating value. So I think that if companies work with newsletters and emails and stuff like that, they really need to focus on communicating value. For instance, I don't know, if you sell, food, whatever. Think about food. Okay, create a week program for a family. How can I cook food for a family for 2-3 children, whatever, you know, you make it easier for the customer to use your product.
I think as well, before we had this recording, you also mentioned personalization and hyper personalization. I before had an online marketing platform, online course platform, and then of course I had this marketing automation going on, and there's a lot of awesome technology. You can like basically see what people clicking on, and then I can know Soledad, okay, you are a vegetarian, you have two kids, I can know a lot about you, and then I can do this personalization. But I don't think that the companies uses that. I get like these emails that doesn't apply to me at all, or you know, my bank, for instance. Why don't they sell services to me that actually provides value for me? What do you see in personalization and hyper personalization?
There is a lot going on there. I do agree with what you say. I think that as I said, e-commerce is still in developing, you know. The first thing was getting data. Everything would, like, everyone was talking about becoming data driven, and you have to get a lot of data. But now it's like, okay, what do you do with the data? And that's the thing, that we are in that state, on that stage for many companies, that they're fantastic. You've gathered huge data, but what are you doing with it? So there's even, I'm also in the advisory board for for IHOM. It's a school for where there's many kind of digital training programs. And one discussion we had there was that there's a huge lack of competence of you know, knowledge within that area, that the companies need more data scientists, need people that actually can, you know, get some insight from the data and use it to create value for the customers. There's a gap there. I mean, we need to work on that. But on the apart from that, that's one thing. The other thing is that the positive thing that there's a lot going on when it comes to technology. So there's companies creating tools in order to improve this, the personalization and even hyper personalization, that they get a level up. Not only that you get discounts, but you get relevant discounts, that you get relevant offers. That I think that there's a huge potential there, and it's coming. I mean, companies are realizing that this is important, and there is a lot of companies working on tools. When I was in London in this conference for 2 weeks ago, I listened to many companies talking about personalization, and there's some fantastic things going on there.
So can you share some of the, like, what is happening that you saw in this conference when it comes to personalization?
Absolutely. So there's a lot of companies working on personalization. And basically what it means is that they get a lot of data on your behavior on the web, on the website, and they can understand already what you need without, you know, like, what's your favorite color trousers, what's your size, etc., etc., what have you liked, what have you looked at. And with that data, then they can offer things that are relevant.
Yeah, because it takes so much time. I think, like, as you said, the minimum was before to have a web page, like, that was it. But now that's not enough. I went into Sarah's web page yesterday. I was supposed to find something. I cannot even sort by color or size. And the same for Zalando. You looking for something, a pair of trousers, you get up like 3,000 of them. Like, I don't have time for that. So that's awesome. That's cool news. I will be happy to go into these web pages where you have this personalization, or we're going to shop. Let's move on to the sustainability trend. That's, of course, huge. What do you see is happening in e-commerce and sustainability?
Well, it's happening a lot. Actually, we've got in the first quarter, this first quarter, we focused on sustainability as a topic in Ebarometern. And so there's several different things. One thing is the discussion that there's going on in on the sector, in the whole sector, in the whole e-commerce landscape in Sweden. Another thing is what's going on within companies. And a third thing is what's going on within the consumers. So basically in the sector, there's this discussion of how can we make our businesses more sustainable. And one important thing is, of course, production. Where is production going to happen? Are we going to produce in China, continue to produce in, like, places far away? Or is it more sustainable to produce closer to Sweden, for instance? One is one discussion. And that, of course, was accelerated with the problems in supply chain during the pandemics, that companies saw that there was in China, they were stopping the harbor, they couldn't get the packages here and stuff like that. So people start rethinking about, are we maybe becoming closer to production, maybe not completely local, but a lot closer. That is one thing.
How just a question on that, the reason why you had it like in the low-cost countries before, because it's low cost basically, right? So like now when a lot of companies are moving home production or very close to home at least, do you see any like innovation that is driving? Because I guess then the prices will increase for production. How do they handle that?
Yes, I think that the prices in general will increase, not only because people need to understand that production, everything costs, like human work costs and transport and energy costs, everything costs. So basically we have become kind of, bortskämda in Swedish.
Yeah, we've been so spoiled.
Exactly, we've been so spoiled free, that with like, lower prices. But I think that in the long run, it is better to understand that you, as consumers, we may actually need fewer things of a better quality. Or of course, when you buy them, if they are going to be more sustainable and last a lot longer, it will probably be more expensive the first time you pay. But in the long run, it may not be. Do you know what I mean? It's not expensive. It's just more sustainable. That's one discussion, of course, the production, as I said. And of course, it may be so that the prices may be affected in the future. Another thing is transportation, of course, which is highly relevant for us as a transport company, logistics company. So basically, the discussion is, what is fossil free? What do we mean with fossil free? And there's several initiatives in the sector trying to find some kind of agreement among the large actors, e-commerce actors, but also large logistic actors. And what do we mean with this? And this is Svensk Digital Handel, so basically the Swedish trade union that focuses on e-commerce, and a company called Aster. They're trying to find this, coming to this agreement. So basically they sat around the table with all these 10 largest companies and 10 largest logistic companies, and they're trying to find this definition. Because it may be kind of confusing for consumers to go in a checkout and, you know, order a package, order a parcel, and understanding the different kind of terminologies that you find in a checkout. You know, there's leaves, there's miljövänlig, like environmentally friendly,
yeah, environmental friendly,
fossil free, etc.
Green, yeah,
clean, etc. So they're trying to find a standard. Another initiative is Svanemärkning, which is also an organization that is working to find a standard, and they are going to soon, I think, it's already done, I think, have a mark that you can have as a company if you are, you know, if you work with some kind of, what kind of fuel you use, etc. And then it means that you are environmental friendly. So there are some initiatives going on in that discussion with transportation, etc. Some other things that are going on within logistics is that companies start working a lot more with reducing the air in their packages, because maybe the normal consumer may not think about it, but air, too much air in packages is bad for the environment.
50%.
It's a lot.
A company working with optimizing that,
exactly,
that's, also huge.
And why is it important? Yeah, because if you send a little, you know, I'm by the computer now, if you send a little mouse in a big box with a lot of air, that means that when we transport, we are just using that space that otherwise could be used with another parcel. So basically, you could fill up a lorry with a lot more packages if we didn't have that air. So air costs for the environment, and it costs money. So a lot of companies are starting to think about a lot more about optimizing the packages. There are some good initiatives there as well. There is a company that we interviewed in E-barometer called Skrin. I don't know if you heard about them.
Yeah, that was the company I was thinking of. With AI, they help to optimize it. Yeah,
exactly. They're basically with algorithms and using... The exciting thing about them that I learned when I interviewed them, it's not that they just optimize that, as I said, that you send a product to a customer. What they do with their AI is to understand what's their assortment in this company, what are the products they have, and then what is the most common order or the most common orders. Basically, they use their algorithm to understand how do they combine the mouse with a pen and with whatever other thing you want to send. You know what I mean? And how can you place them so that it becomes optimal? So basically, they don't talk about just the product, but the order, and then they optimize packages, and they kind of come with suggestions for the company. Okay, then you need these sizes of packages. Those are the most common. And that's the way they reduce the air. So I think it's really, really exciting. So that's what's going on. That was the first part, what's going on in the sector. And within companies, I think that this discussion is also very, very hot. Like a lot of companies are thinking about, as I said, firstly, production, but also packages. And thirdly, I think that a lot of companies start thinking about what is the alternative? Like, do we really need every single time have a new product, or can we have like a circular alternative? Like there's companies that are trying to test having, for instance, a more circular model by the side of new products, beside the new product. For instance, if you've heard of NetOnNet, it's a home electronics company. And they are both trying selling secondhand, so things that are used and they resell them, and also hiring. So hiring a TV instead of buying. So it's more of a prenumeration model.
Yeah, subscription model.
Exactly, which I think is the future, actually, of e-commerce. So going more... to circularity and thinking, how can we extend the life of this product instead of just buying it and not using it anymore or throwing it away? How can we use this product, give it the maximum of the life it can? Because, you know, to produce a product, it takes a lot of energy. It takes human energy in producing it, but it also energy from the planet and also resources. So the more we can use the product and use its functionality to the maximum, the better. So I think that a lot of companies are also thinking about how can we become more circular. Examples of this are IKEA. They've started a secondhand platform where they sell their products. And we usually think, okay, IKEA is more of you can buy cheap furniture, but their products have kind of, I would say, quite a high secondhand value, particularly those that are design products that they are not, they're not selling them anymore. So
I saw that they just they start to redesign their products as well, so they should be easy to demount. For instance, their Billy bookshelf.
Yeah.
So you can sell it secondhand. So that's cool, and and for the third one, the customers.
Yeah, the customers. I do think that, well, that's quite exciting. We have some interesting findings from our report. So basically we wanted to understand, okay, fine. Everybody discusses sustainability and everybody thinks it's important, but how when it comes to like the takeout, how important is sustainability in the decision of purchasing a product? So we asked customers, how important is it for you that you get information about how the product was produced, how the product is transported, etc.? Over 60% of the people that responded said that for them it's really important to get information about the product and the origin, etc., etc. So we stated that it is important. And another statement was that they do expect that companies work and with sustainability and communicate sustainability. But thirdly, when the checkout question was, okay, how probably is it that you end a purchase because of sustainability reasons? It means in the checkout you realize that something with sustainability did not work, and you don't click the product home. And it was just 5% of the people that said it was really important. That sustainability.
I think that's so interesting. Yeah. You have already like taken your decision basically, so then it doesn't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. And over 60% said that it's not probable, that they wouldn't do it. So over 60% that they was said it was not probable or they wouldn't do it. And over 50%, if I don't remember wrongly, it's 52%, said that they don't actually read information, that they don't make their decision based on sustainability. So to sum up, basically, sustainability is a very important issue for everyone and for the planet, of course, and for the future and for future generations. It is being discussed in the e-commerce sectors. It is important for companies to work for it, but the customers are not willing to pay for it, and they are not willing to make an effort to, you know, do not purchase something because of sustainability. So there's a huge dilemma there, like how can companies work with sustainability when customers are not willing to pay for it, and when customers are not actually, you know, deeper interested in actually having sustainable alternatives. And it's a huge challenge, because I of course think that companies need to work with it, have to work with it, and those companies, they want to exist in the long run, because I think that in a couple of years' time, this is going to be obvious for everyone, and people, particularly the newer generations, the younger generations, are going to expect that you do have a sustainable plan, a sustainable, you know, business model, etc.
Then it will be a competitive advantage. We're not like there yet. One final question, Soledad. Like if I have an e-commerce shop, I sell something, goods on there. What should I focus on this year? You can name one thing.
Oh my God, really, it's difficult. Yeah. This year is a tough year because, you know, if we look at the macroeconomic landscape, it's inflation, as you said, when we started, inflation and also interest rates going up and stuff like that are going to affect how we consume and what people buy. Probably people will prioritize the basics like food and the basics, and they may not invest or buy things that are very, very expensive, like home electronics and things like that. What I see is that we will see this effect first in autumn, because I think that in the summer, people have been looking forward to going to restaurants, traveling, you know, meeting friends and things like that. And probably this summer, people will not look at that, at this kind of crisis or economic problems too much. But later on, I do think that people will. So what I think companies need to focus on is how can I create value for the customer apart from price and product? That's the first thing. How can I engage my customers so that they really want to choose me, and not because of the price, just they want to choose me because I am a good brand or a good company. So it is several things you need to think about there, but I think that would be the basic. And the thirdly would be, how can we make it easier for the customer to buy from us? And that could be focusing on, for instance, personalizing the journey, the customer journey, or thinking of things that your customer would really, really appreciate of you doing. One thing that I heard from like small companies or startups like direct to consumer is that they create a close relationship to the customer by talking to them in like private messages. So creating that relationship apart from the product with, for instance, a very good customer service. Basically, I would say create a relationship by engaging, create a relationship by informing on your product being available for your customers.
That's a really great final advice, Soledad. Thank you so much for joining Swedish Innovation. And I will put the link to your LinkedIn if people want to connect to you after the podcast. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much for today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you like what we're doing, remember to subscribe. And if you really like our podcast, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. Remember, innovation is what makes the impossible possible, and it will all start with you.